Talking today with the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Frank Lucas. Congressman, let's talk a little bit about several things going on right now. Since last we talked at the Oklahoma City Farm Show, we have seen the announcement and the actual start of the sign-up for livestock disaster assistance. I've heard people have actually got their checks. That's going good.
Absolutely. The department said that they would make it a priority. They'd move first. Because of the timing, the need to address the California drought, and with the situation in the Southwest actually coming first, they understand they've got to clear. So that's all very good. The indication I get from the constituents is that we've had a record number of people going in. But then, Ron, after 11, 12, the first half of 13, and now miserable conditions since basically the beginning of the year in Oklahoma. If there was ever a need for livestock, sure. If there was ever a need for a nap on the grass issues, this is it. So it's good to know that the farm bill in this stage is working the way it's supposed to. Now, I put one caveat on there, Ron. The language was put together to allow producers to both qualify for livestock, sure, and for nap at the same time. There was an interpretation of the rule 3 days, the law, a previous 1991, 90-something law, 3 days after the signing that created some uncertainty about that. The Secretary and the Department have agreed that in 12 and 13, producers will qualify for both, and I'm working on a legislative way to address the statute for 14 moving forward. So producers just need to know that. But get in and sign up. One other caveat, this sign-up will go way into September. There's lots of time. But in the way the sequestration language works, if you sign up at the very end, there's a potential that the sequestration deduction will occur. So this is a program, sign up sooner than later. Do it as quick as you can get your paperwork together. That's the prudent thing that I advocate to my neighbors back home.
Would you anticipate, once you get your check, you're not going to be asked to give some money back?
That's what I would anticipate. So get the paperwork done, get the check now, before the sequestration kicks in on expenditures after that.
Is there any, you know, is there a limit on the money that can be spent on this particular disaster assistance?
My understanding, we're fully funded, is the way I will answer that question.
Okay. Let's talk about the rest of the Farm Bill implementation. You've heard from Mr. Vilsack in your committee. He's over at the Senate today talking about issues. Seems that one of those hot-button issues right now is the definition of actively engaged in farming.
That's always been a challenge. We discussed that in markups. We discussed that in conference. I would hope that the department will be as flexible as possible because we all know, we all live in rural America. We understand the diversity of how farms are handled and families are handled, and the size varies from very small to very large. Let's just let people farm.
We've got some real regulatory battles going on right now, and there's a couple in your jurisdiction, in your purview area, and one is this APHIS rule they've just closed comments on regarding Brazilian beef coming into the United States. A lot of worries by some of your farmers and a lot of others, ranchers, about the safety of possibly getting FMD from Brazil.
I think that's a legitimate concern, and I agree with my various groups that the comment period needs to be reopened and extended for another 120 days. That'll give us time to look at the information that the federal government used to craft this rule that would allow it to happen. I mean, we're all in favor of free trade, but we have had such a good health record in fighting disease in the United States, in particular foot and mouth. We just need to be very, very cautious. And the standards, in all fairness, are not the same around the world in how other countries, how other producers address these issues.
So have you made an active request to the department for reopening that comment period?
I have made that point to them. Not in writing yet, but I've made that point.
One area that's outside of your immediate jurisdiction in the House Ag Committee, but one that a lot of your ag groups have really gotten stirred up about, is this Clean Waters of the U.S. Proposal from EPA. It seems like, from what we heard from EPA Administrator McCartney yesterday, the farm broadcasters did, she talked about the Supreme Court instructing her to go in and recraft some of the things that weren't clear in their mind. She basically left out the legislative branch altogether.
Exactly. This is a case where the executive branch is trying to do things that Congress would never approve. And for our listeners' benefit, understand, under federal law, as has existed, the federal government has jurisdiction over all waters that are navigable. And that goes back to some 1850s definition of a steamboat. That leaves most of rural America, most of the country in the hands of state regulation. In Oklahoma, DEQ, the Oklahoma Water Resources Board, and they do a very good job. If you, in effect, make navigable irrelevant in the rules, and you give the government, the federal government, jurisdiction from the ocean all the way back to the water that runs off the off of your barn, out of your front yard, off the brim of your hat. I kiddingly tell my constituents back home, what happens if the dog food bowl overflows in the backyard? Now, that's a little bit of humor, but the point is you would give the EPA control back to the source. That's frightening because their track record is not always that of being rational and reasonable when it comes to the economic cost, the impact of their rules. So this is one we've got to fight at every stage of the way. But once again, it is an example of where the administration can't get Congress to do what they want, which is broaden their powers. So they're trying to use the courts as an excuse and the rulemaking process as a mechanism to do it. This is a very dangerous circumstance to everyone out in the country. I would say everyone in the country.
I got the impression this lady may adopt some changes to her proposed rule, but she has no intention of backing off. She's not going to pull the rule.
None whatsoever. Historically, you have three ways of addressing a problem like this. You bring in the department, the agency, and you put them through the coals. What's your jurisdiction? What's your justification? What's your rationalization? What's the cost effect of all of this? And you'd be surprised the number of times that that will back an agency, the federal government, down. It isn't working this time. The next step is to use the legislative process to simply run a bill that clearly prohibits their action or removes what they claim is justification from the statute. But I don't know that we could get a bill through the Senate. We could clear the House. I absolutely don't think the president would sign it. The third mechanism is using the appropriations process. Cut off the money to implement the rule. Cut off the money to create the rule. No paper, no travel, no additional hires. That's why restarting the appropriations process this time is so important. Now, I know my friends will say, well, if the president won't sign the bill, then to repeal or prevent this, why would he sign an appropriation bill that would have the net effect? Even the White House needs electricity. Even Air Force One needs jet fuel once in a while. There are spending priorities that the White House needs. That's our line of defense this year. Now, control of the other body, many people believe, will change in the next Congress. If that happens, then we have full control of the appropriations process, full control at least in Congress of the legislative process. We'll have more leverage with the president. But ultimately, it may take 2017 and a change in president and these type of officials to really get a grip on this problem.
Lester Prairie Chicken, your neck of the woods. I know there's a lot of folks that got some heartburn because of the threat in listing.
Oh, with good reason. This is better than a full-blown listing, but we'll see how it evolves out. But yes, what we've watched go on in a number of other states around the country has now come to us in much of Oklahoma, Kansas, and Texas. And it's just a really frightening example of how an animal, a bird that I've never seen in my home county, can turn things upside down, not just in ag, but in energy and in transportation and in all economic activity.
Finally, you talk with my colleagues here, farm broadcasters, about the fact that you're going to be stepping down January. We're going to assume the Republicans will retain control. That's the conventional wisdom right now. Indicated you are going to stay on the committee. What beyond just this committee, though, what are you thinking is about what time you're going to spend where?
Well, first let me say I'll never leave the committee. I am a farmer by trade. I have an ag econ degree from Oklahoma State University. I've invested 20 years of my legislative life in this committee, and ag policy is as important to me as anything. That said, I, under House rules, can never be chairman again. I probably will become a chairman perhaps on a different committee, a subcommittee chairman, and work my way up through the process. I served, and I say this lightheartedly, of course, I served with the former chairman on both sides of me. The person that takes my place deserves a little bit of breathing room.